We want to thank everyone for coming out and listening to Lightning Hood Live, our weekly review of all things Bitcoin and Lightning Network related. This is our way to give back to the Bitcoin community with resources and educational content. Make sure to check out our website, www.lightninghood.com, for a more in-depth experience. Please enjoy this episode of Lightning Hood Live. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone out there listening to the next episode of Lightning Hood Live. Really appreciate y'all checking in. Today is July 7th, and we have a very special guest, Coin Icarus from, the Fun with Crypto podcast is joining us tonight. Huge Bitcoin and Lightning Network fan. So we look forward to having him catch up with the news with us and talk about Bitcoin and Lightning Network. We also have, of course, Pito Veritas. And we are missing, unfortunately, CoinBeezy this evening and Curly Dream. They were not able to join us, but the three of us are going to hold it down for all you guys tonight. So thanks again for joining, and everybody say hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Welcome. Are we doing screen share?
Oh yeah, I guess I got to do that. Good call, man. Looks like Curly Dream joined us. So what's up, Curly? Man in the chat, I'm assuming. So just to give you guys a rundown, those that listen to us, we're going to spend about 20 to 30 minutes here chatting about the news, the updates in Bitcoin and Lightning. Lightning Network this week, and then we're gonna shoot the shit with Coin Icarus about what he's been doing with his podcast, everything Bitcoin and Lightning Network related. So if that sounds good to you guys, we're gonna just kind of roll on into it. So there was a lot of headlines this week on whether it's green lights into futures, bonds, more exchanges coming on. But the first thing that came in this week was the CFTC has cleared the way for crypto derivative provider IrisX to settle futures in Bitcoin. So that happened this week. Financialization of Bitcoin is always a good thing. What do y'all say?
This is kind of like a step in the right direction. I was reading the article and it's pretty interesting because it covers, I guess, like a lot of the companies that have been pursuing this. So they mentioned how Ledger X received the license, I guess, a week ago, and touches base on how BACT is waiting on something from like the New York Department of Financial Services. And I've never heard of CX, but I guess that's another one too. So they just keep multiplying. So
I don't really follow too much of this part of it, only because I think that, you know, they are gonna just do whatever it is that they need to do so that they can maintain whatever system it is that they have in place. So it's like it's great and everything that, you know, that we're getting this, but at the same time, you know, it's the same system that causes us the problems that we have.
That's a good point. I mean, basically what you're saying is they're trying to remain relevant, I think. And if I had to guess, right?
Yeah, I would say, you know what, like in not so many words, I'd say you're absolutely right, you know, and then that's exactly what it is.
Well,
it's just too bad.
Yeah, hopefully they'll do it in a way where it doesn't recreate a lot of the, fractional reserve kind of aspect of it, where they take collateral and then use it for other purposes. I think Caitlin Long, right, is that who was talking about that back in the day? Or the whatever.
Trace Mayer, I think they were talking about it. Yeah.
What is it? The rehypothecation?
Yeah, rehypothecation of the collateral. That would be not so good. But this is, I think, better than what we currently have with these like synthetic futures, where they're just like cash settled. is it will actually impact the supply, the supply side. I mean, I think, like, to your point, like, it is part of the traditional system, but you probably do need some sort of a bridge between, like, the different worlds. So I don't know, I kind of see it in that light, but until these things are live and we actually see what they're doing, it's kind of hard for me to form my, like, opinion on it. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, there's a couple more similar things we'll chat about real quick. Binance has announced they are going to have a futures trading, so they're kind of tapping in BitMEX's world. And then BitMEX came out and announced that they're going to offer Bitcoin zero coupon bonds. So basically bonds that'll pay, I assume, some sort of interest, hopefully in Bitcoin, to their customers in that case. But, who knows? So,
yeah. And I'm not sure I really understand this. There's another story further down, talks about another, like, Bitcoin denominated bond. To me, it just seems like a bad idea to borrow money denominated in a, like, deflationary asset, but I guess people want, like, different products, but still, like, going back to the other point about issues with, like, the current system and how it might not be as, like, a little bit more fragile than what people think. Like, a product like this to me seems like it's pretty fragile, because what if the price just goes up like a crazy amount? Then all of a sudden you owe, like, a way more money. You know what I mean? Like,
we're going to see a bunch of BitMEX wrecked liquidations on Twitter, except it'll be Binance wrecked and, just for shits and giggles, I guess. But
yeah. But what about, like, the other one, right? The, so I think it's, like, story number six.
Yeah. The European companies.
Yeah. So that's not, like, I'm guessing that's not going to be like BitMEX, where all of a sudden you get liquidated. You know, I mean, these kind of products, if they're, like, in a real market, I don't think there's just an easy out where it's like, oh, whoops, you lose your money, you get liquidated. It's like, no. You owe us a bunch of money. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I don't know. To me, that just seems kind of dangerous, but I don't know. Maybe I just don't get it.
Yep. Don't know. Quinicurus, anything on those, or are you just sticking to your points on the original one?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It's totally dangerous. And I mean, at the end of the day, though, you know, people want, you know, if there's demand for this, then, hey, you know, so someone is going to provide a platform for them. So if it's not BitMEX, then it's Binance. And if it's, you know, then it could just be both of them.
Yep.
I personally don't I don't leverage any of my Bitcoin. I'm boring. I buy it and I
hold, man.
I mix hold. It and I hold it. So
there you go.
You're the so smart, old school.
Smart move. Smart move.
We're so boring.
We got the Warren Buffett of crypto over here. So
you know, so jumping back down to number six, like, I was trying to look through the internet. I went to, like, their two different websites for these companies to see the details on these bonds. I couldn't really find anything, but I still don't understand the structure of this product. So I'm going to have to, like, look into this more. It's, like, really low on details, like this article and then whatever they published on their website. It's just not, it's not clear to me, like, what
clickbait,
this product
is. Right, clickbait, who knows? So yeah. It's crazy. So this was, we won't spend much time on this, but so Cuba mentioned that they're considering some sort of cryptocurrency in order to bolster its finances, we will say. To me, it's similar to, you know, Venezuela coming out with their, I don't even remember what it was called, Petro. I see why they're thinking that. Hopefully they don't do the same as Venezuela and create something just to take out more wealth from the population. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think the article mentions specifically Venezuela, so I'm guessing it's going to look kind of like that.
Lovely. Quinicurus, anything on that one?
I mean, you know, for me, anything that's state-backed is just another, you know, it's just another form of, and I hate to use the word stable coin,
yep.
but you know, like for me, I've said this before. They're it's a misnomer. Yep. You know, they just call it a stable coin, but really all it does is track, you know, the underlying, you know, the underlying fiat, which is currently losing in value. So I don't see how it's stable. And I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, at least at the very least, they're trying to step into the, you know, step into the future and use technology to their advantage. But I don't see it as anything, you know, as anything groundbreaking.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, on to some better stuff. So CASA, I know myself and Pita Veritas. Cornickers, I believe you have a CASA node. Is that correct?
I do. That is all one right. of the nodes I have.
Yeah, one of the many, I'm sure, just like all of us.
That's right.
So they just announced the Sats app. Honestly, very cool. Much needed. They have their own app that's going to pair to the CASA node. Very awesome. The thing, my favorite, I'll be honest with you, my favorite part about this is where you're going to be, where you'd be able to send it to a friend or somebody you know via a name. Like, you're not gonna be plugging an address that's 38 digits or whatever the addresses are. You're gonna use somebody's name or a designated name you set for them. I think that's really cool. What do y'all think?
Yeah, it's kind of like a Samurai wallet, right?
Yeah, you can do it with paynims on Samurai, but I'm thinking more like the cash tag on Cash App, PayPal, you're sending the names. I mean, they're kind of taking.
So it's probably more like that, right? Because is the are the paynims like
it's Samurai
specific? Or?
Well, paynims, there's paynims something outside of Samurai, but they've created something within the wallet to utilize that service. But it's a name's generated. I mean, I would never pick Autumn Glitter for my name, but that's unfortunately the hand I was dealt. So that's what I'm using for my pay name. So anyone out there that wants to donate to that poor name, you're more than welcome to. But yeah, so I think it's really cool. It's kind of bringing the ease of use of some of those other, you know, traditional financial apps to Lightning and Bitcoin. And then, of course, pairing with your node over Tor and all that kind of stuff. I just think it'll be a win for them. I think it's great. It's just another weapon to the arsenal, you know.
I haven't taken a look at the app yet. I heard about the announcement, but to your point, I totally agree. I think it's a step in the right direction, and I like how CASA is sticking to the, you know, helping people maintain their privacy and their sovereignty, you know, but at the same time, still providing an easier user experience, you know, because that's really, I think, one of the main barriers to entry that we still have, you know, like most of us, I think, that are in Bitcoin for the most part, that are using it the way that we're using it, are a little more technically technically savvy.
We almost have to be. It's still, I mean, yeah, it's crazy how hard it still is, even though it's a lot easier than what it used to be, you know?
So last week before this announcement came out, I paired the Lightning Labs app that recently just came out on mainnet. I turned off autopilot and I created one channel to my CASA node. Mm-hmm. So in essence, I was using it as like a bridge like app, which is not quite what this is, because this is just like directly connecting to your node. But yeah, so it's cool because like I was trying to figure out hacks to be able to use my CASA directly from like my phone, and that's what I came up with. But now with this, kind of makes it easier.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, all baked in behind Tor, which your part would not, you're on an iPhone, correct?
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, if you are, you definitely don't have Tor on that. So having the app associated, I think it's baked in. So that'll help at least on the privacy side for you, you know, using the Sats app. It was kind of funny. I was listening to TFTC while I was mowing the lawn this morning, and Matt Odell was on a rant about not just the Sats app, but he's like, I hate these companies coming out with names that are directly associated with Bitcoin, like Lightning App and Sats App. And he's like, and I kind of see his point a little bit. I mean, I get why these companies are calling it this stuff, but, you know, kind of disassociated a little bit so it's unique and not confusing for people. What do you all think about that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, I could tell you even with coming up with the name for my podcast, I was like, I had a tough time because it's like you sit there and you try to figure, you know, something that's interesting, that's relevant, but like you don't want to go too far off into the weeds and then nobody understands what you're talking about anymore. You know, and then yeah, you end up with like all kinds of like, I'm sorry, like, you know, with these shitcoin names, you know, like nebulous and stuff like that.
No, I was waiting for the BSVT or BSV cowboy or something, man.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like my initial reaction is this is Bitcoin and, you know, like whatever, I guess. But yeah, I can see his point too. Like, you know, I don't know. I'm not gonna. There's a lot more in this space to get mad over. So
yeah, no, it's simple, or it's not that big of a deal. I just thought it was funny how as soon as he was talking about it, he's like, "I love everything they're doing with this app, but I hate the freaking name." I don't think he said it that way, but you know, that's just it was just kind of funny.
Well, if anyone's listening, Stacks app is up for grabs, right?
That's right. Stack them sats app. That's
stack,
right.
Stack them sacks app. I can't even say that.
Yeah. I couldn't either unless I was drinking beer. So that's how it flows. I'm just going to keep on rolling here real quick. So CoinSquare, a Canadian company and trading platform. So they have bought a good controlling stake in a fintech software producer, JustCash, that's going to enable crypto transactions on traditional non-bank ATMs in the U.S. They're going to basically retrofit ATMs and sell cryptocurrencies on them is what it comes down to. My initial take is, I didn't read real into this, but my initial take is any place to help people buy crypto, I'm all about. Now, with that being said, just like all these other ATM companies, there's going to be KYC and there's going to be this. So for those that are trying to kind of further themselves, you know, there's going to be some avenues out there with BISC and different things. Liquidity on BISC is still a little shy or a little light, but there's ways to do it, or buy through the ATMs, do whatever, and then mix your coins on Samurai, Whirlpool, or Wasabi, you know? It's all about maximizing privacy here, everybody. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I didn't read the story.
I went off on a privacy tangent, sorry, but Coin Icarus, what do you got? Anything? Have you ever used an ATM in the States?
So I personally haven't, but I have a friend of mine who lives up in Montreal, and I listen to a lot of the stories that he goes through to go and buy Bitcoin, you know, like to be able to get it a little bit faster than, let's say, using something like CoinSquare.
Yeah.
And they use something called the FlexPin. And I don't know if we have that here. I think we might. But essentially, like through that, you're able to go and then purchase Bitcoin. I don't really know much about it, but I could tell you that to your point, anything that makes it easier for people to, you know, to get it and in a way that they already are familiar with. I think that's part of it. Like right now, people have to go and learn how to do something slightly different.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. I wish there was like a flat fee though for these ATMs. Cause I mean, usually it's like eight or 10% fees, which is crazy.
I've got one by me that's 15.
Yeah, that's just insane.
And honestly, it's flexible because what it's doing is the ATM operator has a set fee, but then wherever it's being put adds whatever they want, and then they just put it there, right? And it's in this shady little bowling alley. I went in there one day, and I'm like, so I hear you have a Bitcoin ATM. And he's like, oh, yeah, right over there. And I go over to it, and I'm looking at it, and first thing they ask for your phone number. So I just said, all right, I'm not using this. And then, I asked him, or I went on to see how much it was. It was 15%. I was like, son of a gun, you know, yeah. I'd rather buy on damn Conbase and mix it, you know? I mean, that's how I don't know. It's just kind of crazy, but either way, like you guys said, it's good to get it in front of people the way they're used to. That'll at least get the ball rolling. And then from there, they dive down the crazy rabbit hole that we're all in and learn further.
Yeah. I think at a minimum, like if you're buying it off an ATM, like it's almost like a thought experiment where you're like, wait, how's this even possible? Like, I don't have like an account with this random ATM.
I stick it in the toilet paper and I get Bitcoin. It's like, holy shit.
Cause I think a lot of people still don't really understand Bitcoin. They probably think you have to have like an account, you know, with like a service provider or something, you know? So like when you see it at an ATM and you're used to how ATMs work, where you stick cash in and, you know,
Or they're expecting a shiny gold coin with a B to pop out of the ATM, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. So I thought this was pretty cool. I'm excited to see what Electrum comes up with for Lightning Network. It looks like they're going to be Thomas, and I don't even know how to spell or pronounce it. I don't even know how to say it. So the developer behind Electrum, they're implementing Lightning into the wallet. So that's going to be really cool. I love Electrum. I use it, you know, for different things. And I think it'll be really neat to see Lightning put in. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I think that this is great. I haven't really looked into, I think I saw an article about this a while back, right? They were like beta testing it or something. Mm-hmm. And it looked pretty cool. I guess they're just going to add like another tab for the interface. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything that's like negative about it. So
yeah, it's a good, simple wallet. I mean, I used Electrum a few times. You know what the problem is? Like, I don't know about you guys, but you know, I don't know how many different types of wallets you've tried out, but you know, after a while you just, you try so many different ones. At this point, I just, you know, between my nodes and the Trezor, I don't even really install any software unless it's just to test it out and see how it works. But yeah, I definitely, you know, obviously Electrum is a solid, you know, a solid, simple product that does exactly what it's intended to do. So it's cool that they're throwing Lightning into it.
No, I agree with you. And honestly, for people that are a lot of people out there, Electrum might not even be needed. But, you know, personally for me, I have a cold card, so I keep it air gapped. So I need Electrum. I think Wasabi just integrated with Cold Card too, but I need Electrum to construct my transaction prior to signing it on the Cold Card. So, you know, everything's done, partially signed Bitcoin transaction there. And also with the Samurai Whirlpool, I use it to load up and be able to spend or access some of those post-mix coins before the mobile wallets rolled out. So I'm using it, and also to create multi-sigs for that matter. It's a great option if you want to create between, say, a Ledger, a Trezor, and a Cold Card. You want to do a 2 or 3 multi-sig for yourself. Electrum, you know, makes it easy for that. So that's my use case. And I'm sure I know a lot of people use it, but again, it's not a necessity out there either. So
yeah. Can you have multiple Electrum wallets on the same kind of like PC?
Oh yeah. I've got too many.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I've got too many. Yeah. Cause I think I've tried I don't use it as often, but when I tried to, set up another account, I couldn't really figure it out because it just kept asking for like my hardware wallet.
Well, basically, like, you would log in with the hardware wallet, and then you just go up to the tab and just the Electrum or the file tab, and you say new, and then while you have that one in the background, you just then go in or create a new one right there. So
okay,
so you have to log in first, basically.
All right.
All right, so we've got about 5 minutes to spend here on the rest of this, so I'm going to blow through this stuff here and kind of tie a few of them in together. So Blockstream, gosh, they've had a ton of announcements. So they've announced a liquid swap tool that's going to allow atomic swaps on the liquid network, you know, based on you can go.
Oh, I think we lost them. Can you still hear?
On Liquid. Oh, yeah. Can you hear me?
Oh, there you are.
Oh, there you go. Sorry. You came back.
Oh, lost you for a minute. So the liquid swap tool from Blockstream, they have also announced, let me find all this stuff here. The liquid network for support for Blockstream on the green app, or the green iOS and Android app. So I actually was playing around with that yesterday. So on the app, you can access Bitcoin, Liquid, as well as Bitcoin testnet. And it's all, when it's on Liquid, it's confidential transactions as well. So that's really cool. And then they've also announced their, a new version of the Blockstream satellite software, which had some bug fixes that were causing some people some issues. So all really cool stuff from Blockstream. Anything from you guys on that?
I actually just installed Green Wallet, and I configured the Liquid Bitcoin wallet, but I haven't figured out how to connect it up. I was told that you have to set up a peg in order to get something on there, but I was told if you don't want to set up a peg, then the easiest way to do it is to go get it on an exchange.
Yeah, so the only reason I did it actually was my good buddy here on the man in the chat, Curly, actually has set up his Liquid, I think a Liquid node, if I'm not mistaken, and he actually sent me some, a couple thousand Liquid Satoshis on there to just kind of see how quick it was. I mean, it confirmed in 2 or 3 minutes. It was kind of cool. So I can see the use case for why Liquid's there, but again, also creating a peg to, whatever asset you wanted with as well, So pretty neat. Pito, anything?
Nope.
Okay. Real quick on Samurai. So they had a recent update, the version 0.7, which has Tor functional in there. There were just some issues on the early on, releases with Tor just not acting right. So that came out this week, as well as the first picture from Keto Miner and the Noddle guys of what the Dojo Noddle is going to look like. This beautiful red piece of art here. It'll be really cool. It's going to be an upgraded version. There's going to be a lot of extra stuff on the inside. So I kind of know what's going to be inside, I feel like, but I'm not going to say it. I'm not allowed to. But some really cool additions coming in there. I'm excited when they release it. They'll probably have pre-orders in the next month or two, but I don't see it getting out to the public probably till, October at best, probably, because he's still building it at this point. Any thoughts there? Coin Icarus, do you use any of the Samurai, whether it's the mobile wallet or anything like that?
No, I don't. I've installed it, but I don't actually use it.
Okay, cool. I was just curious. Zap Desktop, they had a big release actually. This allowed for basically after Lightning. The Lightning desktop came out and went Neutrino. Now Zap is fully on mainnet with a full node on the back end if you don't want to pair to your own node. So this is a big move on their end, allowing a Neutrino connection. I don't personally use the desktop app for Neutrino. I have it connected to my own node, but it's slick. Just some nice, every UI change they do is awesome. So really cool to see. Do y'all have Zap or use it?
I need to get it. I mean, it's getting to a point where I feel like if I don't install it soon, it's going to be so many features to learn all at once. And I'd rather just learn it over time as these changes happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tested it and I definitely like it, but unfortunately, I don't use it regularly.
Okay. Well, try it out when you get a chance. It's nice. Lightning Labs, they released 0.7, which now has watchtowers. Woo! That's exciting. Yay. So that'll be nice. I'm actually eventually going to have a node, a spare one I've got here at some point, just set up as a watchtower. Just for fun to see how it works and see what happens there. So that's going to be really cool. Cold Card released. I thought this was really neat. So they just came out with Multisig last week we were talking about. And now they, with the 2.1.1, it now has, you can now create words with dice rolls all with inside the card itself. So basically true entropy.
Yeah, right? It's so cool. I bought dice too, but I bought 10-sided dice. like you know, nicely weighted ones too. And I'm like, damn, because I was trying to do this on my own, you know, and then basically I found out like it's not a great idea. But I guess with this you know, having it in like a tool that generates that last checksum, I think that was the issue that I was having.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, hopefully you can use multiple types of dice, not just like a 6-sided dice or die.
What do you think, Cornicorus? I think you said you had a Trezor, so I don't think you have a Cold Card, right?
I do also. I do have a Cold Card. Nice. I love that thing. I think it's so cool. I'm trying to get NVK to come on to do a talk on my podcast, but I do love the Cold Card. I think it's amazing. I set it up. It's you know, Trezor is good, but the Cold Card is great, and it's like it's much more of
cypherpunk, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's so much more hardcore.
I mean, who would think this little crappy calculator would do everything that it does, you know?
It's not so crappy anymore that has clickable buttons.
Yeah, well, I still have the old MK1. I guess it's the MK1. So I'm stuck with the depressed finger push, but it still works now. It's so cool what he's made with that thing. I mean, I can't even fathom doing that, but pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think between like the three of us, we probably have like so many different Lightning wallet / Bitcoin hardware devices.
Oh, I'm sure it's unbelievable. It's crazy. Other than that, we're going to wrap up the normal news section here. Everybody listening, go check out the Medium article. CoinBeezy always does a great job curating it for us. So check it out. It's linked to this video. It's linked to the website. And you know, you can find it on Twitter, wherever else. But
I want to give a quick shout out to number 2 down in the podcast episodes section.
Oh, yeah.
I watched that with Randy Brito from Lochamesh in Venezuela.
Okay,
and that was a pretty good interview. So it's about halfway through this Kaiser report, and basically, just he talks about the mesh hardware company that he started in Venezuela. So
nice.
It's very similar to, I guess, other initiatives like the Gotenna mesh stuff.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, those are the only two that I really can think of that are trying to do mesh networking for sending either messages or Bitcoin around without like reliable internet. So
well, hopefully they partner up a little bit and kind of, I could say, what is it? Lot 49.
Hopefully like, I think that it would be good for them to partner down the road, but like hopefully they can figure different things out on their own. You know what I mean? Like, so we have more options. But yeah, I mean, I think eventually all these kind of projects will want to collaborate at some point for one thing or the other. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all good. Well, everybody, check that out. Now on to the fun stuff. Cornicorus, thanks a bunch for coming on with us. It's exciting. We've been talking about this for months at this point, I think, you know, and we're all getting busy doing stuff. But I wanted to, I guess, first start with, so what got you into Bitcoin or Lightning or the mix, whatever? I mean, what was the, let's talk, what you got?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. And yes, we have been talking about this for months. And I just want to give give props to you guys. I love the Lightning hood, and you know, I wear my T-shirts proudly. I've had quite a few people give me props on the shirts. You know, they see me, and I don't know if they actually know what it is, but it's cool. You know, so
that's cool.
Yeah, so I definitely want to start by by saying that I love what you guys do for Lightning and Bitcoin. I got into Bitcoin out of, I guess you'd say, like, out of necessity, because I needed to get something that you know, wasn't readily available and required a different method of payment. So back when Bitcoin was like between $400 and $700, it was like early 2017, maybe yeah. late 2016, before before the Bitrash split. That's when I started learning, but I unfortunately I had nobody around me that knew anything about it, and I immediately went from like using Bitcoin to investing in shitcoins.
Oh man!
So it was terrible. It was like for me, it was just like, oh, look at this. You know, somebody showed me Bitrex, and I was like, there's 12. And at the time, there was 1,200 coins. So it was like, oh my god, you know.
Oh, I'll throw $50 in 100 of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're like Pokemon, right?
It was horrible. It was terrible. And of course, you know, every single project, you know, has all these different use cases that are completely useless. And I didn't know any better. But you know, like so many people's story down the shitcoin rabbit hole, you come back and slowly, as you destroy every single one of those projects with logic, you get left with only one. You get left with the original thing you showed up for.
Oh, well, you were a genius up until about November or early December of 17. You know, I mean, that's really, I mean, you were a genius. All your buddies were like, holy shit, you know, he's like, he's a millionaire. And then gone.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the space is very much like experiential learning. You know, you have to kind of go through certain things to really understand what the heck is going on, you know?
I don't think the world has ever seen anything like ICOs, you know, at least the world that was unable to ever invest in anything like an ICO. Right. And when they got access through these exchanges to a bunch of, like you said, 2,500 shitcoins, just random things that had a cool acronym, you know, they were like, holy shit, I can just swap these things back and forth. And, you know, this one just pumps 1,000% a day. And, you know, people are making a lot of money, but it screwed a lot of people up too, you know? And again, you come back and hunker down and you're like, dang, everything one of these coins can do, if it's good enough, will eventually make its way to Bitcoin, you know?
That's what I started learning. You know, like if the technology is good enough, then it's going to go into something that is actually being used and, you know, that actually serves the purpose that it was intended. So, yeah, it was definitely a wake up call. And I definitely lost. I'm not going to go into dollar value, but I lost a lot of money. And like so many other stories, you know, the amount of Bitcoin that I started with was not even close to the amount of Bitcoin that I ended with after that. Like it was terrible.
Yeah.
So
it's unfortunate to go through, yeah. But it's a learning experience, you know, and makes you better. So now you know. And well, there's not much else you can say about it, really, you know.
It's no, exactly.
But all good. So thank you for the shout out earlier. What you're doing for the space is awesome as well. The Fun with Crypto podcast and everybody that's listening, I've linked it in the video. You're diving in with a lot of really good people here and just getting to chat about what they're doing and how they're progressing in the space and, you know, talking about, you know, their thought process and vision on what Bitcoin's going to do. I personally really like the Stefan Livera podcast that you did. So that was really good. But you know, tell what got you in. I know we chatted a little before, but what got you into wanting to do a podcast in general?
So, you know, as I was explaining before, it was, you know, October 2018, you know, and times were grim, you know, and everybody was sad and, you know, there was no moon and no Lambos and, you know, it was all terrible. So, and like, I was sitting there, you know, like you guys, right? We're totally sucked into our lightning nodes and we're seeing all this development going on and Watchtowers is coming and, you know, we're going to have Neutrino and there's going to be all kinds of amazing stuff and, you know, automatic channel balancing, and every time you look at the news, it's all Bitcoin's dead. So I figured, all right, you know what? I'm gonna do a podcast, and of course, I'm a huge podcast listener. I started listening to some of the first podcasts were. Actually, the first podcast I ever listened to that had to do with Bitcoin was Tim Ferriss's podcast with the interview with Nick Szabos, if I'm pronouncing his name right, and Naval.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, I think I listened to that one too. That was like a while back. I mean, I listened to it after I think he recorded it, but yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. That's cool. All right. Well, that's so basically. You know, we were all in the same boat. I mean, we knew it deep down. We all know what's happening and what's going to happen eventually. And in the end, you want to bring value somehow. And, you know, we also, not to be selfish about it, but we want not to think about fiat, but fiat gains down the road for all of this one day. And the only way for that to really happen, and I think it goes unnoticed, but is education. And you really have to pump that, because everybody, most of my friends around where I live that are into this stuff, they're like, oh, it's like stocks for them, right? I mean, they're like, oh, but these stocks go up thousands of percent, you know, instead of 10, 20. They're just in for the quick gains. And, you know, it's a far level past that. And we need to get the education of why the Austrian economic side of why you're into Bitcoin and stuff like that, right? I mean, what do you all think there?
I think I agree with that. And back to what I was saying before, I think a lot of it has to do with, your own kind of personal journey. Like, you have to, no one can teach you this. I mean, you could, take sit your friend down and onboard them left and right and up and down, but if they don't like actually take it upon themselves, like, they're not gonna really progress down the rabbit hole or learn or
So I also, to your to your point, I've had the few friends that I've gotten into Bitcoin, let's say I've gotten five friends into Bitcoin. Out of those five friends, one of them sees it similarly to the way that we see it.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other four are exactly what you just said. You know, it's like a stock, only it's something that is even more abstract, and it goes up really fast and it goes down really fast. Like, I remember when I was sitting there explaining to one of my best friends about Bitcoin, he works for a Fortune 500 company, and he just turned around and said, oh, well, you know what? IBM is working with some company, Stellar Lumens. I'm like, okay. and to me right there, like, that's the way they, unfortunately. So going back to that whole point of educating people and everything, it's like that was also part of the reason for, doing a podcast is, there needs to be some material out there to counter the very poor material that's out there about how all these other, these other altcoins are the same, because they are not, right? They don't really have the same qualities as Bitcoin.
They just have a name that has said, oh, well, I mean, what happened to the, what was it? I don't even remember what they called it, where all these companies went with Ethereum, like the 50 companies, they called it something. The Ethereum, it was like a block of a chunk of companies that were like, oh yeah, we're going to use it.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And then whatever happened to that? I mean, they probably realized they're screwed after Ethereum went from, oh, 1.0 isn't going to work, so now we're going to come out with a 2.0 and try and figure it out.
It's probably still around. I mean, back to what you were saying
before. The consortium, right? The Ethereum.
Yeah, the Ethereum, something like that. Yeah, but, again, so, and I've been kind of thinking about this past couple of weeks about really the key differences between something like Bitcoin and like pretty much everything else. And I don't really think it's a technology consideration. I really think that it's because of the way that the network is structured, where, we're all running nodes. Like, I'm on Lightning, you're on Lightning, you're on Liquid, you're doing this, you're doing that. we're not all connected to the governance of Bitcoin. You know, there's no foundation. There's no, you know, whatever company consortium that you're talking about for like Ethereum, right? Yeah. I have no idea what the Bitcoin community, quote unquote, is doing. Like, all I know is that my node is running and it's going to stay running, right? So if you're on all these other networks, you're going to have to keep up with what's going on the foundation, because if the foundation comes out with an upgrade, you're off the network. You have to like, you know, either be pushed an update or know what's going on, or just not even run a node. And I don't think a lot of people using these other networks are actually running nodes. They're just kind of like, you know, oh, I'm using the coin because I have a wallet, you know, and that's not the same. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to like think more on and try to figure out ways of explaining that to people, because I think that's a key difference that I see, is that you have this distributed network that can't be changed versus everything else that has like a governance and purpose, and through those mechanisms get upgraded and changed all the time.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
I mean, you can't even, normal people can't even run an Ethereum node. It's not possible. They don't have the space. I mean, I think they're down to like two or three nodes, I think, Inferior, whoever, Consensus or whoever runs that thing. It's, you know, they're the main. So your trust, what you're basically saying is Bitcoin is the one system that has rolled out the only way it could be rolled out to do what it's supposed to do and have that decentralized, trustless environment that, you know, it's the consensus from all the nodes that are really going to dictate what way things go, you know? And fortunately, nothing else can really do that at this point, because there's always somebody that's deciding, okay, we need to make this. And from there, you're already cutting your leg off, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Did you ever see the, there's an interesting tweet thread from Jameson Lopp, I think it is, where he was trying to get an Ethereum node to sync.
And, I remember that.
And he was documenting the whole thing.
I remember that. Yeah. So, oh, he said it was awful. I mean,
he ended up giving up.
Yeah, and
ended up giving up after like a month.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Yeah, and especially from somebody that knows hardware very well and software. I mean, if he couldn't figure it out and do it, yeah. I mean, it's...
And the only solution to that is to change the technology, right? Make it so that you can run a node or something if you somehow break up that blockchain into like multiple shards or whatever they're working on.
Like Ethereum Classic too, right? You can fork it until like
the point is though, like if you get into this like repetitive cycle of constant upgrades and changing the actual blockchain technology, what's preventing someone from like slipping in there like, oh, a special request, like, hey, this money that was accidentally frozen like 2 years ago, can we unfreeze it, right?
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, things change. It's not like an immutable record anymore, because whatever, quote-unquote, mistakes happened in the past are now resolved, right? And that impacts everybody, but you didn't really have, nobody asked you. They just did it.
Yep.
So.
Good point.
And I'm not trying to single out one project. This happens every project that does this. They make decisions. The governance council, or whatever the structure is, they make a decision that impacts everybody using that network, and you really don't have like a choice.
That's right. You don't have consensus, and you don't have discussion. You know, you just have one person or a very small cabal that, you know, pass the rule of law.
And we're right back where we started, right? Essentially. All right. So we're all big lightning heads here. Quinicarus, how many nodes you got?
Okay. So I have six at home, and I have one. No, sorry. I have five at home, and I have one at the office that I brought in to show some other folks.
All right.
So I'm at that, but I have a Raspberry Pi 4 board on pre-order, so I can get that going with the Raspi Blitz image.
Okay. So what do you? All right. So you've got a Casa. What are everything else? Oh. Have you manually built? I guess is that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's one Casa, and I have right now 4 Raspi Blitzes, of which they're running randomly from versions 1.0 to 1.2.
Interesting. So how was the? I'm just curious. How was the sync time on the Raspberries?
Okay, so interestingly enough, it's actually not that bad. But the process it has different parts to it. So if you do the torrent download, which I suggest anybody who's going to do the Raspi Blitz, if you don't have a local copy of the blockchain and you have to download it, then you do the torrent download, and that's probably going to take, depending on your bandwidth, maybe like 12 to 14 hours.
So you're downloading a pre-done or up to a certain point blockchain, is that
exactly?
Okay, and where is that coming from? Is that a like a signed verified version, or I'm just curious at this point.
I believe so. Okay. I've actually it's not good to be ignorant, right? But I guess I'm trusting that Rootsall and the Raspi Blitz team.
Okay, so it's coming from those. Okay, so it's coming from those guys, though. Okay.
Yeah. It's part of the whole setup, and the setup is actually really simple. It really is. It's a easy UI, and you go through the whole thing. But let's say once you've downloaded the torrent and you're doing the that final blockchain sync.
Yeah.
Let's say if you're running, if your hard drive is an SSD drive, mm-hmm. okay, then you're looking at maybe 48 hours until you're actually up and running. And I'm talking about 48 hours from the time you start installing the image, the Raspi Blitz image,
to
the time that your node is actually completed. Whereas if you use a spindle drive, in my experience, which are the spinning drives,
yep.
That have moving parts.
Yeah.
Through a Comcast connection, it's taken me in some cases easily 4 to 6 days.
Holy. Okay.
Now, have you tried downloading the full blockchain using like a regular like computer and then just copying that data onto the Raspberry Pi, or do you have to get like a special snapshot for Raspberry Blitz or whatever?
So they
Raspi Blitz.
No, they do offer instructions because you do have to format the drive through XFAT.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to format the drive specifically, and you have to set a setting in the config file so that the blockchain can be moved from node to node.
Okay.
So
yeah, but I meant like rather than just downloading a snapshot from someone else. Can you just download the blockchain yourself on a beefier computer and then just copy it over in kind of the same manner, so that way you're not having to trust anyone?
Yeah, you absolutely can. They offer that in the options.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, that would just take time too, because it would be validating the entire chain. I don't know how many days that takes, but
if you did it from start, I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, I remember the Casa guys saying it would be weeks, because you can basically self-destruct your Casa and
I don't mean downloading it with a Raspberry Pi. I mean like downloading it on a regular computer.
So that can definitely be done fairly. I would assume the torrent he's talking about has other configurations pre-packaged into it from an install standpoint.
And that's why I was asking, like, have you tried to do it that way, so you don't have to trust the torrent website?
Gotcha.
Or is there a special?
I think they have an option for that where you could download it and then you have to go in and adjust all that, certain configuration. So I don't see that. Yeah, it's definitely not an issue. You can do it with the Noddle as well, if you want to, and do all that. I mean, the Noddle syncs it from the beginning anyway, just because it's a more powerful board, and the Pi 4 that you're getting is a powerful board as well. So you should be able to sync from start the blockchain in, I would say, about 50 hours, I think. So without even having to use a torrent. So that'll be nice when you get that thing set up and rolling. So somebody had a question for you in the chat, Queen Icarus. They're saying, did you have all your nodes on the same network? I just kind of typed in there. My initial thought would be you would either have to be all on Tor for all of them or port forwarding on different ports. What do you do in your case?
So interestingly enough, and I do, so all of my nodes are Tor nodes. But I had also been thinking of that as well, of course, because I, you know, obviously after I set up my first node, I'm like, well, wait a second, they're using the same ports.
Yeah.
So it's like now all of a sudden I have to go and change ports. Now, interestingly enough, one thing I found, even though, and I don't know if it's because of my router or if it's just because of, the Raspi Blitz, but it seems that, even though they were all behind the same IP address, before I implemented Tor, I was able to find them all on 1ML, even without doing the port forwarding. But I do have to say, I did have port forwarding enabled for one of the IPs. But interestingly enough, it seemed to be working for at the time I had three nodes.
That's really interesting. Actually, so they were collecting incoming connections without technically a port forward on them, without you manually doing it at least.
That's right, because the only thing I started to think, you know, stupid thoughts like, okay, well, you know, why don't I just put a whole range of IPs, you know, on a DMZ, you know, which is like the militarized zone, and unfortunately, one of the last things you want to do is expose a whole bunch of IP addresses to the public.
So I wiped my CASA node once Tor. I came to the conclusion that once I was thinking about initially putting it on, you know, going converting my node ID to Tor, but then I was talking to some people and I was like, well, shit, I've already done all these transactions on that node ID. And then once I hopped to Tor, it's still the same node ID. So I was like, well, that makes no sense. So I completely wiped it. I've probably wiped, I had like 60 channels open, which stunk. You know, I can't imagine the amount of sats I threw down on closing and opening channels. But, you know, it was a learning curve. It was interesting. And then once Tor was involved in all this stuff, I basically closed it down and started fresh. So it was interesting to see that. So I guess the same person was asking bandwidth. What kind of bandwidth do you have for five nodes? I mean, in my initial thoughts, it really, once the block download happens, there's really not much bandwidth involved. I guess there still is, depending if you're allowing incoming.
I mean, so you know what? I don't actually measure, you know, I mean, I don't actually measure the bandwidth, which is probably something I should, you know, so at least I know, you know, for my own edification. Mm-hmm. But to your point, I think it's negligible once the initial block downloads are complete. It really is. I would say it is negligible.
I mean, I think if you're open, especially with Bitcoin Core or Bitcoin D, if you have open ports allowed incoming, you're still multiple gigabytes. I mean, it's a fairly substantial amount. I think we're fortunate enough here, or a lot of us in the in the States, where the ISPs, we have a fair amount of leeway on, you know, per data usage. So I don't think we get hit hard with anything like that, at least yet. So you know, who knows what'll come, but that's where hopefully Blockstream satellite and all that comes into play. Do you have a satellite set up?
I do not. I wanted to set it up, and I wanted to set it up when I think it was Grubel's.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I ever read his article, and this was this is going back to like some point in 2018. Like, you know, maybe it was like February or, you know, something like that, 2018. And I just never actually got around to it. But I heard the instructions have gotten a lot better. And the parts list are like really refined now. So they tell you exactly what to get. So I think I might be up for the challenge soon.
Nice. Yeah, I think Keto Miner is going to actually install it onto the Noddle, or we're going to have the option to install it. So then from there, it's just getting the parts list and rolling. So
sick.
Yeah, that'll be slick there. I know Curly Dream, our other partner there in the chat, he's got everything ready. He's just got to install the satellite itself. So I think he'll be set up on it soon, which will be really neat to see. I'll be curious to see how that works. But I guess, so let me ask you this. Aside from Lightning Hood shirts and goodies, what are you using either on-chain or off-chain? What are you going out and doing with it? Are you using it for education? Are you just gambling it all away? I mean, what's your vice?
Okay, so I mean, when it comes to Bitcoin, let's say on-chain, off-chain, when it comes to Lightning, it's really just like buying all the goodies. Because it's just so fun. Like, I love getting all the, you know, the stickers and you know, the t-shirts and hoodies and stuff. And I noticed that Magical Crypto Friends has their plushies back in stock. Not that I really want to plug them, but those plushies are pretty tempting, even though it's difficult to give up Bitcoin for plushies.
I hear you.
But for the most part, it's just hodling. I like that I used to trade. I'm a terrible trader. I've proven that
from
I can say from
your initial statement there at the beginning, right?
I definitely, like, you know, it's like, know thyself, right? And like, that's like, you know, I'm definitely good. I'm better at losing money trading than I am at making money trading. So I don't bother trading.
I hear you. Well, that's a good thing. Hodling's the way to go.
So it's all just hodling. And of course, anytime I buy something, whether it's with Lightning or Bitcoin, like, let's say I spend, you know, 50, 60 bucks, I'll end up putting back. I try to put back at least double that. Nice. You know? So,
yeah, that's smart. Yeah, I mean, that's like the, you know, one of the things I always hear is like people saying, oh, don't spend your Bitcoin because, you know, reasons. And I'm like, well, you just buy more before, yeah. After you spend it.
Exactly. No, I think that's, you know what, you're touching on an important point. You know, it's like, if people don't use it, then it's not usable. So it's like, there's nothing wrong with using it for something that you really want. And if anything, what it's going to do is incentivize a different behavior.
Yep. I agree. No, that's, I mean, that makes complete sense there for sure. And we almost need to encourage it. I mean, everybody, we're all out there pumping stack sats, but I mean, go out and spend it, rebuy it. I mean, you're going to be spending the fiat anyway. What's a 1%, you know, 1 or 2%, you know, spread between it, who cares? You know, it's getting it out there and using it. So
absolutely. And you know what, like, to your, you know, to your point, like, you know, when we were back in 2017, you know, I was buying Bitcoin at 12K. I bought Bitcoin at 14K. I bought it at 16K. I bought it, you know, back down to 10K, and I bought it at 3K. Yep. So it's, you know,
and none of that is financial advice.
Exactly. None of that is financial advice.
But you're staying dollar cost average. That's all that matters. Don't go out and try and play the trading game. It's we've all learned our lesson there, I think. And you know, it's the way to be. So stack those things, spend them, and restack them again. So I think that's the best advice anybody could give. So I guess we're coming on an hour here. We typically don't want to go too much longer. I guess before we hop off, do you have anything with Bitcoin or Lightning you wanted to bring up? Any questions towards our end going on? Or if you don't,
and replug your show.
Yeah, I was going to say, you beat me to it. Plug your show. Let's tell us what you're doing, your website. I mean, I have it up on the page. I don't know if people can see it perfectly, but it's linked. Yeah, let's just go with that. What you got?
Cool. Thank you so much. So again, I really appreciate it, you know, being on Lightning Hood, and I'd love to come back on, and I'd actually love to have you guys on my show sometime.
That would be cool.
I think that'd be very cool, you know, going full circle. So yeah, it's, you know, the, My website is really just a place for my podcast. I actually recently bought a domain, which is btclightningvault.com, and I haven't done anything with it yet. But I'm enjoying building these lightning nodes. Yeah, you're about to go to like a namecheap.com.
Yeah, I got to do it. Yeah.
But anyways, I don't know what I'm going to do with it exactly, but it's going to be Lightning Resources. Maybe it's a place to showcase custom cases that I build and stuff. And
cool.
You know, I mean, so yeah, anybody who wants to check out, you know, anybody who wants to actually go and check out my, you know, all of my podcasts, it's funwithcrypto.libsyn.com. And, you know, if you want to reach me on Twitter or Telegram, I'm at CoinIcarus.
Yeah, definitely check him out, guys. Just scrolling through the people he's chatting with. I mean, it's a great list of guys. You know, Stefan Livera, you got the Lightning Node Roundtable, which I listened to, is really good. Bitcoin Von Brecky, I just saw that. I didn't catch that one. Matt O'Dell, another roundtable. The guys from Crypto Cloak that make the what I would consider skins for the Rasblitz. Very cool stuff. Of course, Bitcoin Rabbi. I have two of his books here at home for my kids. You know, you've had some great discussions with these guys, so I definitely recommend you guys check them out. Again, it's funwithcrypto.libsyn.com. So definitely check them out. Again, CoinIcarus, appreciate you coming on with us and, you know, going through the news with us, throwing your two Satoshis in there. And, you know, it's always fun to get people on and get your all's opinion. So that's gives another take on what everybody's thinking out there. So that being said, I want to say goodbye to everybody. Thank you for checking out Lightning Hood Live. We'll see y'all next Sunday. Y'all want to say goodbye real quick?
I'm honored to be on.
Have a great rest of your weekend.
Yeah, definitely let us know when you want to do a show. We'll come on your way the next time and do something a little different. So that'll be cool. So thanks, guys. Enjoy your evening. Catch you next week.
Thanks again for checking out this episode of Lightning Hood Live. Make sure and check us out at www.lightninghood.com and follow us on Twitter at lightning_hood. We'll see y'all next week.